The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Monday evening here, I gave a talk on intention and how meaningful it is, important it is, I think, to spend time reflecting on what your deepest intention is and to somehow find the ability or sometimes the courage to live from one's deepest intention, whether that's in the big scale of our life or it's in the moment, just this moment here. And in teachings of the Buddha, there's a very strong tendency in his teachings to be dichotomous, to point out that there's always, in every moment, a choice between two different possibilities. There's many possibilities, but two general categories of directions to go. We can do something that's either helpful, healthy, or something which is unhelpful or unhealthy. And being able to make that distinction is a very important distinction in his teachings. If you don't have any sense of what's healthy, helpful or health-producing, you won't do it. And if you don't have some sense of what's unhealthy for you, then how would you know to avoid it? The word that he uses is skillful and unskillful, kusala and akusala. But maybe we'll make that distinction. And so the idea of having some sense of intention that's informed by some understanding about what's what is skillful, unskillful, helpful, unhelpful, and what is most beneficial for us, what's most meaningful for us, what's most significant, and how in each moment, in a sense, that question can be asked. Every moment, do we meet the situation with in a way that's healthy or helpful for us and others? Do we meet it with our goodness, our clarity? Do we meet it with compassion and kindness? Or do we meet it with obscurity, with resistance? Do we meet it with aversion? Do we meet it with judgments and in a way that's not helpful for anyone? Now, how do we meet every situation is all this. And this is all in introductory statements for me to want to read a poem to you. And a very famous part of the American canon that I came across again recently. I had to memorize it in fifth grade. And I haven't thought about it since. Didn't think about it then either. but now I like it. And I think it's very evocative. And so I'm sure most of you will recognize it. Some of you had to memorize it. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both, and be one traveler, long I stood, and looked down one as far as I could, to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other, as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for that, the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden back, black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. And that has made all the difference. So coming from out of Buddhism and reading this poem kind of through that frame, the woods in Buddhism is sometimes a symbol for the world of entanglement. We get entangled in the world in all kinds of ways, in the jungle and the vines and all that. And the idea is to, and the word for, one of the words for attachment is a homonym, has the same pronunciation in Pali as the word for trees. And so it adds to this idea that the world of attachment, the world of trees, of forests, is something you want to become free of. So we find ourselves in this world of, and they say the yellow wood, it says in a yellow wood. It's a fall, right? Probably in New England where Robert Frost was. And so yellow is the sign of death in trees. You know, the leaves are dying. And so we come into this wood that is dying, or time in our life where we realize that things are coming to an end. And it's very poignant to actually have an encounter with our mortality and sense that in the relationship to our mortality and things coming to an end, that our choices are really important in what we do. And so two roads diverge in the yellow wood. There's always a choice in the woods. Which way do we go? Do we go further into it? Do we get more entangled? Or do we find the way out of it or to be free of it? And here he says, I'm sorry I could not travel both. And be one traveler along I stood. And looking down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. So the one looks, it disappears into the undergrowth. And the undergrowth in the Buddhist symbolism, the undergrowth is even more entanglements than the trees in the forest. So you kind of, to be lost in the undergrowth means it's so overgrown that you can't even find the path anymore. So here one of them at least looks like it disappears into the undergrowth. And as this poem goes along, that's the one that's most taken. That's pretty evocative, huh? That's the way people get lost in the undergrowth. And then I took the other, it says, the one that doesn't go into the undergrowth. And I looked up in Wikipedia this poem, that's where I found it and printed it up. And there was these literary analysis of the poem that people have come up with, theories, I guess. One of them was that Robert Frost wrote this because he went walking regularly, and his companion could never decide which path to take. So it was a response to his friend. He wrote the poem. But another literary interpretation, is that it's a champion of American individualism, that the individual counts, and you can make your own choice, and it's up to you what path you take, and all that. But that works somewhat well for Buddhism as well, because Buddhism also has a very strong individualistic streak, because only you can walk the path. You can't ask someone else to walk it for you. You can walk with someone, people can accompany you on the path, but you still have to walk the path yourself, and you have to make the choice for yourself. So they did, then took the other just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear. So again, not many people go down the second path. A lot of people go down the path that goes to the undergrowth, but not some people go to that other path. And that's often one of the reasons why some people find it hard to follow a path, any spiritual path, often, but certainly a path to liberation, because it often makes us so different. It's so different from what's popularly or socially expected of us, what's normally seen as being the right thing to do and what our family wants or whatever. I met with someone recently, a young person, who it was so clear that who he was, the kind of person he was, is, that he was basically kind of a monk kind of person. And he was struggling with that side of him and what he thought was his parents' expectations of what he should do. What does he follow? What the path that's kind of like he was made for, in a sense, or the path that his parents expect him to do? Oh, I kept the first for another day. But then this, I think it's very powerful, the next sentence. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. So we make these choices, and one of the reasons it can be difficult to make choices is that the choices make a difference. And and who knows what opens up, or what path opens up, or how things unfold from there. You might never come back to the same thing again, same possibility, same choices again. You never know. You never know if you made the right choice. Sometimes the variety of choices come along, and you take one, and there's not like a sample group to compare your choice with, because it's unique to you. So who knows, something, you didn't take that job that you should have taken. Oh, I should have taken that job. But who knows, you've taken that job, maybe you would have been hit by a truck. you know, standing in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know, who knows what, you know, who knows anything. So it's consequential, our choices. And do we ever come back? And so some people get frozen then at that juncture. I can't make a choice. How do I know? I'll lose something. I don't want to lose something, but I can't go forward because. So the poignancy of the choices we make, and even the small things, the poignancy of meeting a friend, and, you know, appreciating a friend or something, or not. You know, what do we do? And then I shall be telling this with a sigh. I think it's very interesting that he's predicting the future here. I shall be telling with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in the wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. So as some of you know, I'm fond of this, the analogy of two parallel lines that go on forever, never touch, never depart, always same distance. But if you nudge one of them ever so slightly to the side, then for a long time you don't see them any different from departing at all. But over enough time they get further and further away, and over enough time they become, you know, immense distance between the two lines. That a very small choice and intention and change of course today might not seem to make a big difference tomorrow or the next week, but over the months and years it can make a huge difference in your life. It makes all the difference. And Buddhism puts a tremendous emphasis that the choices you make make a difference, and that we can have a role in the choices we make. We have a role in setting the course and direction of where our life is going. It doesn't mean that you're in charge or in control of where it goes. You're not in charge of where the path opens up to, or what comes to you, or what arises because of it. But no matter what arises, it's always our choice. How do I meet this? How am I present for this? If something terrible happens, how do I meet that? If something beautiful happens, how do I meet that? That's really your choice. Someone in the interviews brought up the concept today of nature and nurture. And when the person said it, I realized that it works very well for the tension. Talk about a tension exists in Buddhism between the path of cultivation and the path of letting go. That sometimes there's this nature, this thing that can bubble up within us that was not our doing, that can, that's an important part of the path. But then there's also the very important part of our doing, our efforts, what we make. So both exist together. Nature and nurture exist together. So our job, the degree to which we can have something to do, is to set the course and decide how we meet the moment. And then what arises because of that, that's maybe the nurture part. And hopefully we get nurtured by all this. I hope your path nurtures you, supports you, and brings you lots of strong sense of well-being and sense of being at home in your own heart. May your heart be a home. So thank you.